Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And in this episode, we want to talk about the recent American College of Cardiology, ACC, scientific sessions, which were held in Chicago. And there was some really exciting new data that was presented. We want to start off by talking about the SOUL trial. So this was the cardiovascular outcome trial with oral semaglutide, or Rybelsus is the brand name. And earlier this year, maybe it was the end of last year, we had heard that there were top line results saying that the oral semaglutide had a 14% cardiovascular risk reduction. But not until now did we see the full data presented and published. So it was published simultaneously in New England Journal of Medicine. So that is really, really awesome. And I'll just give kind of a little high-level overview of the trial. So it's double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized controlled trial of people that had type 2 diabetes. A1Cs had to be between 6.5 and 10, and they did have to have atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, chronic kidney disease, or both. To be included. And then the primary outcome was major adverse cardiovascular events, which was a composite of death, cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, or non-fatal stroke. So what we consider that three-point MACE. So what did this show? It showed out of 9,650 participants that were randomized that in the placebo group, there was actually a 13.8% incidence of this three-point MACE compared to 12% in the Rybelsus group. And so this was a 14% reduction. This was considered statistically significant. And it's impressive. So Natalie, what do you think? And how is this going to affect your practice?
So I think we were all waiting for some real data because, you know, we can believe the injectable semaglutide, right? We can believe that we know that this is, but there are people who absolutely, they are never going to give an injection. This is not happening. And we just kind of all wondered, is this really going to give us that same or similar cardiovascular risk reduction, right? And now we can say, yes, it does. And this is a true treatment option. So, we if we go back and a little bit in the trial, we need to pick people with that already have some sort of cardiovascular or CKD or both, because the trial would have taken 25 years, right? So we pick people that already have something, right? So let's just make sure you understand why we did that, why they did that, right? And look at the differences. This really is impressive, right? So I think that we can now feel comfortable as clinicians making the decision with the patient to choose to do the oral semaglutide. And I guess I take that one step further in the, they're looking at higher doses for more weight loss, for other things. And when those higher doses come out, I'll not hesitate at all to use those as well, knowing that even the lower doses are reducing these risks.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just so great to see. We're a big fan of having additional treatment options. And I think this really just proves it is the semaglutide itself, whether it is given orally or injectable, that is what is leading to improved cardiovascular outcomes. I mean, to your point, yeah, they're using people at high risk because it's going to be faster to show that benefit. Certainly, you'd expect to see it's going to have a benefit in anyone. But someone that is low cardiovascular risk, it would take a long, long time to ever even see that difference. I do want to mention that they also did a post hoc analysis where they looked at people that were on SGLT2 inhibitors to see if there was a difference in terms of this outcome, this three-point MACE, and people that were on SGLT2 inhibitors or not. And what they found is that irrespective of SGLT2 inhibitor use, there was still a benefit seen. And I think that is also really important as well, because we want to see that this has benefit on top of other proven therapies. So ideally, when people enter trials like this, you want to see that they're on all the tried and true therapies. So things like ACE inhibitors and ARBs, they're on statins, their blood pressure is at goal, their lipids are at goal, they're on aspirin, all the things that we would typically do in practice, and that this is adding additional benefit on top of that. And so I think it's great to see that it is adding additional benefit on top of standard therapies.
I absolutely agree. And when we think about this, right, what are we doing in clinical care? We, you know, what you and I know is that magic of adding an SGLT2 with a GLP-1, and we see this potentiation, like it potentiates the action of both of them, it feels like, right? We don't have data on this, we don't, but like adding it to an SGLT2 inhibitor that we use to treat heart failure, that we use to reduce the risk of kidney disease, and it still has that MACE reduction. And so to me, this just gives us another option in our armamentarium to say to a person, look, we have these choices in a GLP-1. We have these choices in an SGLT2 inhibitor. We can look at cost. We can look at patient preference. We can offer more to try to improve the outcomes of the people sitting in front of us every day.
For sure. Now, there are some things I do want to highlight about oral semaglutide that, you know, in a real world setting, it's hard to know how this would play out. So it is a medication that is very affected by other oral medications, food, liquid. So it needs to be taken in a very certain way. It really needs to be taken on an empty stomach, and even not with other pills. And even the pills can't be split in half. It can be taken with up to 4 ounces of water, no more than that. And then other pills, food, anything should not be taken for at least 30 minutes after it. And this is done to guarantee the absorption. If it is not taken this way, let's say someone decides to take it with their other pills, or they, I don't know, they get a higher dose and they're splitting it in half, it is not going to get absorbed. And so benefits are based on someone is taking the drug and it is being absorbed properly. And so I would love to follow this with perhaps some real world data too, to see how it is, you know, how it's going in the real world. And I think it's up to all of us too, to just educate our patients, make sure they understand this about this medication, check in with them if they're taking it and make sure they haven't forgotten how to take it. Cause it is easy to get confused. People are on so many meds and they're like, wait, which one is the one I'm supposed to separate? So I just think this education, this counseling with this one is so important.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, some of the easy things are bring this medicine to bed with you. Keep it on the bedside of your bed. When you wake up in the morning, have a 4 ounce juice glass, right? One of those tiny little juice glasses. Fill it with water or at least 3/4 of the way. Take the pill. Now get in the shower, do your thing, get dressed, but make sure you note what time so that by the time you get downstairs, you're already 15, 20, 30 minutes in. Because if as someone comes, you know, and does this in their day-to-day routine in their kitchen, in their whatever, they have a much higher chance of adding coffee or adding, you know, whatever else or taking their other pills. Let's separate this behavior out so that it is the easiest to do it consistently every day. And I found that that's really the best way to get the person with diabetes the highest chance of making this work.
Yeah, I think those are some really great points. And with Rybelsus, actually, they have come up with a way to improve the absorption. Mm-hmm. So currently the doses are you start with 3 milligrams. That's like the starting dose that you do for 30 days. And then goes up to 7 milligrams, which is considered the first therapeutic dose. And then you have that option to go to the highest dose, which is 14 milligrams. And by the way, the other caveat with this is it is protected in its pill bottle and you can't put it in a pill box. You can't put the pills in your pocket. Like it needs to stay in that bottle because that is what protects it from degradation. Now they are coming out with a new formulation that actually is it's a lower dose because they found a way to make it absorb better. So instead of the 3 milligrams, it's going to be 1.5 milligrams. Instead of the 7, that's going to be 4 milligrams. Instead of the 14, that's going to be 7. Hopefully when this rollout happens, it'll be smooth, but there will be 2 different dosing options for a period of time until ultimately the lower dose options are going to replace the higher dose because, quite honestly, it's more potent or it's better absorbed. And that makes sense because I remember when Rybelsus first came out, I was like, wait a second, 14 milligrams a day you're going to have someone take. When we know with Ozempic and Wegovy, the highest dose is 2.4 milligrams a week, right? So 7 times higher per day. So immediately in my head, I was like, well, wait, how much is this drug going to cost? You know, because it's such a higher dose. But really, we know the cost is not related to necessarily the number of milligrams. There's other factors that impact the cost. So fortunately, it's not more just because it's a higher dose. But all that to say is I do think overall, it's good that they've come up with better ways to absorb it. And also, there's, I think, a lot of hope for the future, too, because they are working on other oral GLP-1s. And one of them that's being studied is called orforglipron, which would be an oral version that wouldn't require kind of this special way of needing to take it. It could be taken more like how a person takes a regular pill. So anyway, it's a kind of exciting to see where we're going in this GLP-1 space.
Absolutely. This is really exciting. And again, it's another option for people with diabetes. We need as many options as possible to help fit as many different people that we see every day as possible.
Right. So one more thing I would love to talk about from ACC is the STRIDE study. And this was published in The Lancet. So it's always so cool when they present out on new data and it's simultaneously published. It's just like, it is like the greatest thing when you're at a scientific meeting when that happens. So anyway, this was a study that looked at semaglutide and walking capacity in people with symptomatic peripheral artery disease and type 2 diabetes. This was a phase 3 double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial. And in this study, they actually had 1,363 patients that were screened. 792 were randomly assigned to semaglutide, and then the rest were assigned to placebo. And Natalie, you want to kind of share a little bit more, share the results of it?
Absolutely. So, you know, the top line results were announced back in November, and I think we may have talked about it briefly on one of our other episodes, but maximum walking distance on a constant load treadmill, so it's going, right? Always going. It doesn't stop. It doesn't give you a break. Was 21% versus 8% in placebo from a baseline of 185 meters at week 52, meeting the primary endpoint. So what does this mean, though? What does this mean to you and I and people with diabetes? So lots of people with diabetes end up with something called peripheral artery disease. And what happens is it causes problems ambulating. It causes problems walking. So now people with diabetes aren't walking. And what do we say all the time is diabetes is a cardiovascular disease. I need people moving. We need to move, right? So, you know, we need to look at this and say, how does this, you know, the outcome says to us that this is actually clinically meaningful improvement in a person being able to do more for longer. So I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited about looking at this. You know, we've been looking at GLP-1, GIP, and combinations and all the different treatment. You know, first we were using it for diabetes. 12 years ago, that was it, right? And now we're looking at this. Is it, and it makes you start thinking about, okay, what is this? Is it because of the anti-inflammatory effects? Is it because, you know, that we actually aren't necessarily sure. But at week 52, you know, semaglutide conferred a clinically significant and superior improvement in the ratio of median change from baseline by 13% compared to placebo. By absolute measures, participants on semaglutide had 40 meters greater improvement from baseline of 185 meters compared to placebo. They're consistent across all subgroups, age, sex, A1C, and BMI. And so what does that mean to diabetes? Can you go to the grocery store? Can you go for down the street with a friend? Can you do a little bit more for longer in your lifetime? And that makes me, and this is the 1 milligram dose, by the way, of semaglutide. So I'm very excited about this data.
Yeah, I mean, it's so amazing. And yeah, so this was done in people with type 2 diabetes. And I mean, it's impressive data. They could easily pursue another indication and then have this indication, which would be amazing because we've never had anything. We've never had a type 2 diabetes drug that had an indication for PAD. I just like to think about how this could impact guidelines too, because right now, I mean, the guidelines have just come such a long way. I mean, really, it used to be just about glucose management. And that was really all we would think about. Like, how much A1C lowering do you need? How much does the glucose need to go down? And now we really have it stratified by multiple things, but especially the CKD, the cardiovascular disease, and the heart failure. And then recently, kind of this last year, they added in like the MASH and the MASLD, like the liver disease. So it's like, now is PAD gonna be in there as well? And so it's really cool to see how we're not so glucose focused. We are actually complication focused. But to your point, like, not just complications, like the things that really matter to people. Like, can you play with your kids, your grandkids? Can you go for a walk? Can you go to the grocery store if you want to and need to? So it's like, it's just really exciting.
Yeah, and one of the panelists on at ACC, their quote was, "Feel better, walk better, live longer." I mean, what else are we trying to do for people with for people that we see every day? Feel better, walk better, live longer. Wow, like that to me just shut me down. I was like, okay, let's do this, right?
I love it.
This is exactly what we're trying to do, is exemplify every single time, all day long, higher quality of life and longer life, right? I don't want someone sitting in a chair, right? I want someone being able to move when they want to move and feeling better about it. So this is very exciting.
Yay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.